Chapter 21 The Holy Mixing Vessel. As an introduction, we would like to quote from 1 John 5, Who is it that overcomes the world, but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? This is he that comes with water and blood, Jesus Christ, not with water only, but with water and blood. And it is the Spirit that bears witness, because the Spirit is truth. For there are three that bear witness in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit, and these three are one. Now we would like to quote verses 6 and 8 of the 7th Hermetic Book. It was his will, my son, that the link with the Spirit should be obtained by all souls, however, as a prize for the race. He sent down a great mixing vessel filled with the powers of the Spirit, and he appointed a herald and bade him proclaim to the hearts of men, immerse yourselves in this mixing vessel, you souls who can. You who believe and trust that you will ascend to him who sent down this vessel, you who know for what purpose you have been created. In antiquity, a chalice-shaped vessel was used for mixing water and wine. Whenever the Bible speaks of mixing water and wine, or water and blood, such stories are almost always connected with the self-sacrifice of those who go out to serve the great work of liberation. Water, or bread, is the symbol of the holy ether forces. Wine, or blood, is the symbol of the holy astral power, which is freed by sacrifice to serve the liberation of mankind. Think, for example, of the biblical story about the wedding at Cana. Also, when one of the soldiers pierced the side of Jesus with a lance after he had died on the cross, blood and wine flowed out of the wound. The Hermetic Gnosis explains that it was God's will that the link with the Spirit should be obtained by all souls, however, as a prize for the race, and it mentions the great heavenly vessel for mingling water and wine, filled with the powers of the Spirit sent down by God, so that those who immersed themselves in it would be purified and could return to their former glory. This, too, is a splendid description of the work of the Brotherhood of the Holy Grail. The prize for the race, the prize for the souls, is the immersion, the purification, the baptism of water, wine, and spirit in the mixing vessel, the Holy Grail. This baptism is open to everyone. It is withheld from no one. It cannot possibly be kept from anyone. Yet it can manifest itself only to those who have at their disposal a worthy, pure soul. This soul creates a certain state of vibration in the head sanctuary. This enables the radiation of the Seven Spirit to flow into the human being in a positive way and make a binding with the Rose Heart, the latent spirit principle within him. If you think of this, you will easily understand why throughout the ages people have spoken of a cup, a grail, a bowl, a vase, a vessel from which the living water flows. The thirsting soul which has become mature refreshes itself with living water from this cup, the living water of the New Testament. The quest for the Holy Grail is anchored very deeply in man, which explains the reason for the innumerable legends concerning the Holy Grail, King Arthur, and the Round Table. The Grail is a missing link for nature-born man. In this light, it is also clear why the Brotherhood of the Holy Grail exists, for the Grail is the fulfillment. The Rosy Cross brings knowledge of the path. The Brotherhood of the Cathars, the Pure Ones, taught about joining in group unity to walk the path, but the crowning of the path is the Grail. That is why the final initiation of the preceding Brotherhood, which took place in the Cave of Bethlehem, was connected with this coronation feast. The candidate was linked with the Grail. He drank, not symbolically but in reality, from the cup of the New Testament. He was connected with his Pimanda. It should now be clear to you why the triunity of the light must cooperate. Grail, Cathar, and Cross with Roses. This has been the case from the very foundation of the world, in order to proclaim the gospel of liberation to all souls who are eligible and to help them on the path. That is why we read in verses 8 and 9,
He sent down a great mixing vessel filled with the powers of the Spirit, and he appointed a herald and
bade him proclaim to the hearts of men, Immerse yourselves in this mixing vessel, you souls who can, you who believe, and trust that you will ascend to him who sent down this vessel, you who know for what purpose you have been created. Those who gave heed to this proclamation and were purified by immersion in the powers of the Spirit became partakers in the gnosis, the living knowledge of God, and, as they had received the Spirit, became perfect men. This text speaks of two different kinds of baptism. First, the immersion, the purification, the rebirth of the soul, then the grail. The Bible also deals with this subject, which proves that much in this holy book has been derived from the Corpus Hermeticum. The Bible distinguishes between the baptism of conversion, of change, and the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Mankind, which still stands in the state of astonishment we spoke of earlier, has become completely confused as a result of this. In churches and sects, baptism has become an exclusively symbolic act. There is infant baptism and baptism of adults, sometimes by the hundred. The baptism of the Holy Spirit is symbolically imitated in the celebration of the Eucharist. Such symbolic imitation has no meaning whatsoever. Only art is called to express symbolically and repeat in its own way what the holy language teaches. Man can be deeply affected and moved by an artistic expression inspired by the living truth. Our rejection of modern, meaningless symbolism does not, of course, apply to the symbolic customs of the ancients, which were based on profound inner knowledge. The preceding Brotherhood, for example, was not able to make use of the printing press to make its writings known to the public. That is why spiritual tenets were presented in the form of symbolic language and ritual, so that by continually hearing, seeing, and understanding, the seeker's insight would be deepened and he would react positively. However, if symbolic acts are imitated without any inner knowledge, simply following religious tradition, in ignorance and without power, they become corrupt and ridiculous. In addition to symbolic action, there is also Gnostic magic. In many respects, living symbolism and Gnostic magic are alike. Yet inwardly, and later, as regards their results, they are not at all alike. We will try to explain the meaning of Gnostic magical action. Suppose you become a pupil of the spiritual school and, as we have just explained, find yourself faced with the requirement of the baptism of reversal because the universal seven spirit can do nothing until your soul has become pure and worthy. The baptism of reversal is an inner conversion which you will have to prove by your way of life. In dialectics, people put things the other way round. If everything is all right externally, if people can give their faces the right makeup, depending on how it fits in with their plans, they consider themselves civilized. You will realize how foolish this is. Therefore, the prerequisite is inner reversal, and its reality will quite naturally become evident in your life. If, in this state, you live your pupilship, it may happen, for instance, in the temple or outside it, that Gnostic soul radiations are transmitted to you and consolidated within you through the Gnostic magical action of brothers and sisters. In this way, you are helped to get over certain deadlocks and difficulties. When you have prepared yourself with the aid of the school for the baptism of the Holy Grail, of course the same law applies again. It is only merit that promotes. If you have entered the state of soul maturity, some obstacles may still exist on the biological and purely physical level. For example, an endocrine organ may not as yet be able to react sufficiently due to hereditary weakness or a natural organic disturbance. The obstruction may then be neutralized by means of Gnostic magical action. As changes take place in the racial body over the centuries, these obstructions are generally not of the same kind. 700 years ago, the disturbances and obstructions in the endocrine system were quite different from what they are now. the help of Gnostic magic will naturally be adapted to this and must therefore avoid old customs and look for efficient new ways. In this way, an apparently simple action may often have enormous consequences. You should bear in mind that we are speaking of Gnostic magic and not simply of ordinary magic. With regard to the application of Gnostic magic, Protestant churches and sects have lapsed into an altogether externalized symbolic action and have therefore become powerless. As a consequence, they have at best a cultural and ethical function. But this is not the case with many other churches and societies. These definitely do use magic in their rites and symbolic acts. However, this magic is totally dedicated to, and so to the advantage of, the church or group aeons. And as magic, in the long run, influences the bodily and personality structures, there will also be changes in the endocrine system, the blood, the serpent fire, and indeed, every atom. If someone submits himself for years to such magic, either as a receiver or as a transmitter or both, he will carry its signature and its consequences with him in every atom, and never or only after many, many years will he be able to get rid of it. You will understand that the school always takes this into account. All the preceding brotherhoods did so, and they followed an even more radical policy than the young Gnostic brotherhood, which definitely has to consider all this, particularly as it consists of such a heterogeneous group of people. Why is it necessary for the young Gnosis to take this aspect into account? The answer is obvious, because the aeons of nature, in their urge towards self-maintenance, will do everything possible, must do everything possible, to delay the development of the Gnosis. That is why they send those who serve them everywhere to fulfill particular missions. The Gnosis has only one aim: to make you drink from the cup of the Holy Spirit, not to let you be drowned in the cup of some aeon or other. Are there any of these servants of the aeons active in the spiritual school? How can they be recognized? How can one see through their aspirations, and what should be done to protect the work? From a dialectical point of view, we would be able to give very detailed answers with the aid of the knowledge of signatures. We could explain how we usually act in cases of need, but what would be the result? You would keep such a watchful eye on one another that the possibility could not be ruled out that the group would fall apart, and the school would become a ground for disputes, with many pros and cons, fierce criticism, and severe tensions. It would mean playing into the hands of the aeonic forces, which are bent on obstructing the development of the Gnosis. In fact, under no circumstances is anxiety necessary if only you do what is said in verse 9. Those who gave heed to this proclamation and were purified by immersion in the powers of the Spirit became partakers in the Gnosis, the living knowledge of God, and, as they had received the Spirit, they became perfect men. That is the recipe. Let nothing stop you from remaining directed towards the one aim, the one task. Keep perfectly and steadfastly directed towards that aim. As long as you do not do so, you will find that efforts are continually made in all kinds of ways and using all kinds of means to plunge you back into a state of unawareness and astonishment. That is why the prescription has been given. Let nothing keep you from your devotion to the one aim, the one task. That is the best means of protection. God's sun shines on good and bad alike. It may happen that bad people, in the sense of being enemies of the work, also enter the spiritual school or are already there. Basically, this is not a difficulty. However, since all receive the light and power of the Gnosis and experience its effects in the same way, the results will show who is evil and who is not, who has hidden motives and who has not. Therefore, none should be restrained by the suggestions and influences of adversaries, whatever their names may be. To sow anxiety, worry, and fear, to cause unrest and panic, is a well-known tactic by which you should not be deceived. Be positively directed, then nothing nothing will be able to harm you. When presently you enter the Grail Mystery and are allowed to taste the baptism of fire, you will know at a glance all the adversaries. You will know them better than they know themselves. In every situation, you will then know what you have to do.